Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, it's Lois. If you're a person with a disability who's wanting to achieve a goal and is looking for some help to get there, then maybe I'm the person you need to talk to. Listen after the interview and find out more details of how I can help you to reach your goals and dreams. Thanks today to Hindenburg Pro for assisting us in producing the show. That's Hindenburg.com. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Strachan, and today we're returning to the topic of adaptive sports, and we're talking adaptive archery. We're joined on the call by two people, Sean Anderson, who is a three-time Paralympian and an archery adaptive archery coach. And we're also joined by Ferdy van Eerden, who was the first person who introduced me to the topic of adaptive archery. Gentlemen, welcome to the call. It's great to have you with us. And I'm looking forward to learning about adaptive archery. So I'd like to ask you just to introduce yourselves. Ferdy, can we ask you to just tell us a little bit about who Ferdy van Eerden is and a little bit of your story?
Okay. My name is Ferdy van Eerden. I live in Centurion. I'm a T6 to 8 paraplegic after a motorcycle accident about 25 years ago.
And Sean, how about you?
I'm Sean Anderson. I like long walks on the beach. No, I'm joking. I can't walk anymore. But yeah, I'm Sean Anderson. I'm a three-time Paralympian. I live in Pretoria. My life is archery and coaching. I have an archery shop. I have an archery range. I coach. And I'm devoted to the sport of showing people with disabilities and without disabilities that if there's an obstacle in their lives, they can overcome it.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Out of interest, the three Olympics that you participated in, where were they?
Rio de Janeiro, I ended 17th in the world there. Tokyo, 7th. And then Paris, I missed it by one to go into the medal matches. I was 5th in the world.
Wow, congratulations. That's quite an achievement.
Thank you.
So I suppose there are going to be a number of people watching and listening to this going, adaptive archery, what is it and how does it differ from what we typically associate with the term of archery? So, Sean, do you want to tell us what is adaptive archery and how does it differ? Or what are the similarities?
Well, the similarities are exactly the same, you know. On the differences, either you're going to be missing a limb like I was when I first started when I went to Rio. I lost my arm 22 years ago in a motorbiking accident. Mm-hmm. I ended up in the chair 7 years ago. So going to Rio, I was standing and walking. I was shooting with a brace that I designed on my shoulder. But to get to that point, I had to overcome obstacles to teach myself how to shoot a bow because mm-hmm. back then nobody in this country knew how to do it with me. So I had to teach myself. I taught myself, and through that I was able to learn how to work with other people who had disabilities to help them overcome their obstacles by sitting in a chair, whatever the obstacle was, that we could make it a lot easier. So in the 15 years of being in the sport, I've become quite a I can actually say I've become quite a connoisseur on that side. I mean, Ferdy met up with me and Ferdy started shooting with me. And, you know, so, yeah, so for me, it's a passion of making a disability, like with especially with the quadriplegics, to show them even though they don't have hand movement, whatever bit of movement they got, we could actually get them to shoot a buck.
And what techniques and do you blind. Use? Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, just shortly. Yeah,
I'm working with a blind chap now again.
Yeah.
So the nice thing about archery, it's a sport open to everybody. So we've got blind archery. So there's three different divisions. In the sport, there's two different bows. It's the recurve bow and the compound bow, which are both in the Olympics, where in the able body Olympics, it's only the recurve bow. LA, they're doing the compound bow will be an exhibition sport. So that's coming into the LA Olympics. And then in the divisions, you have a compound men open, which Faddy's in. He's in a wheelchair and he's got the rest of his limbs. I'm in W1. I call it the spook and pluck class. We're a bit more disabled than the others. And then you get the blind, blind class, the impaired class. So yeah, we all compete. The impaired class, they compete at 40 meters on a 120 centimeter target, which is the big target. And then the rest of us compete. If we're shooting recurve, we're at 70 meters. Compound, we're at 50 meters.
Okay. So that's the basic concept. But I'm curious to learn a little more about the detail. And without wanting to disrespect anyone's situation and condition, the drawing of a bow. I have drawn a bow once. It was with the assistance of someone who is sighted. It was actually when I was in Mauritius. And I know how much strength it takes on both arms. So talk me through some of the adjustments and accommodations that you are using, the techniques that you're using to make archery inclusive.
I think Faddy can answer that because Faddy got to me when he started. So, you know, he can explain it a little bit from his side, how he experienced it in the beginning there.
Great.
Yeah. In the beginning, obviously, you're using muscles that you don't usually use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be difficult for anyone to start. I don't care if you can walk, swim, crawl, or whatever. But especially the compound bones, you can tune down the strength, if I can put it like that, the poundage. So it makes it easier to pull, and there's different techniques of pulling as well.
Okay.
For me, my balance was an issue, so I had to compensate by either leaning backwards while pulling, and there's always a way to do it.
Yeah.
Don't have to be the strongest person to do this sport.
Yeah. So from my side, you know, everybody who comes to me, I'll first assess, because every person's different. You know, every person in a wheelchair's got different requirements. Every person's break is in a different place. Every person's balance is different. So for me, the big thing is first I assess what we're dealing with. If it's a guy who's missing a leg, if it's lower amputee, higher amputee, what are we dealing with? What's his balance like? What's his strength like? So on the compound bows, like Faddy said, we can play with the poundage quite a bit. We can play with the let-off, which is where it goes over and it goes into full draw. So at the let-off, you can go down to like 85% let off. So even if you're pulling a 55-pound bow and you get to a certain point, that bow becomes very light for you. The opposite is on the recurve, though. The recurve, if you're pulling a 28-pound or 30-pound recurve and your draw length is 28, you're going to end up pulling 34 pounds on your fingers. So that's where you've got to make the decision with the disabled athlete. Are we going to go which route for them? Because it's all to do with strength and building up strength. What I have noticed, though, is as you start getting into the sport and you get stronger, your strength gets better, and you learn to over adjust your body. You learn to use the parts of your body that can actually do the work for you. So, like in my class, I'm allowed to get strapped in because I'm also a paraplegic, so I can get strapped in because I've only got one arm. I don't have core, all of that. You know, Faddy's also allowed to get strapped in, but he's only allowed to get strapped in with a certain size strap, where I'm allowed a bigger strap. So every division is a bit different. On the blind, on the or the blind, the partially impaired, we have a frame system which you get into, which you stand in, which helps you to come up, puts you into the right posture. You've got a coach behind you in the beginning, on the warm up. He's allowed to help you adjust your sight, and after that, you learn how to adjust it, and that's where your strengths come in, because your other senses are a lot more stronger. Touch, feel, all of that is is very strong, which I've picked up on my blind athletes that I work with. So every athlete is different. So you got to, for me, it's about not when a guy gets me and says, I want to shoot a recurve. I go, okay, cool. Let's try it. Let's see how your body reacts to it. And let's see what we're dealing with. The problem, especially for wheelchair bound guys, is our cores and that strength. So, you know, pulling a recurve bow, It takes a lot more strength to pull that. So it depends on the person's strength after all. With me, when I first started, I shot with my mouth. So I was pulling back a 55-pound bow with my mouth.
Oh, gosh.
And releasing it with my mouth. So and then I realized, listen, I'm getting to a point where my muscles in my neck were overdeveloping, things like that. So I had to come up with a different attitude. So you adapt everybody to that. I've got a quadriplegic that – I strap his hand to the bow because he's got no hand movement, but he's able to bring his arms up. And what we did is we extended on the trigger, I extended a pipe that he uses his ear to release the bow. So if there's a means, there's a way.
It really sounds like kind of a great metaphor for the way we live our lives with disabilities, that we manage to find the techniques that allow us to do what we want to do. So I really love that kind of as a thought that, you know, adaptive archery is very much like a metaphor of life. So
of course,
thanks for sharing that. What is the difference between the bows? You've mentioned them a couple of times, the recurve and the compound. So what is the difference there?
I call the recurve the sickle stock. So it's a lot harder. The recurve takes, so to sum it up easy, recurve, if the amount of work that I put on a compound bow, a recurve archer will have to put double that amount of work in to get to the same level as me.
Do they?
Because it's a lot more. They look different. Yeah. So your recurve bow is a lot longer bow. It's almost, explain it easy. It's like looking, almost looks like the Robin Hood type bow. It's
longer. The long bow, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot more advanced. The thing with the recurve bow, the technique in shooting a recurve bow is a hell of a lot of technique. And what a lot of people don't realize, archery isn't about strength and about all of that. Archery, I tell people from day one, archery is 80% mental. Mm-hmm. 10% strength and 10% the luck of the draw of the day. Is the wind blowing at 200 k's an hour? Is the rain coming down? Is it cold? Whatever. But archery is 80% mental. So everything we do in archery is subconscious work. So when you program in the subconscious to do the job. So in the beginning, for a new archer, adaptive archer, whoever it is, that first period of 2 months, 3 months is where a lot of hard work comes in to program the body to be able to do what you do. So when you're in the wheelchair, like with me, I've got a certain way of picking my bow up, doing everything. I've got these steps and I stick to those steps. Now on a recurve bow, your steps are a little bit more than on a compound bow. So the technique is a little bit more you're using your fingers to release the bow. Where on a compound bow, you use a trigger to release it. So you got more control, if I can say it that way. And then the other difference is the compound guys have a scope and a peep, and they can zoom in and they can see it. On recurve and on the class I shoot in, even though I shoot with a compound, we're not allowed to shoot with that. So we shoot with I shoot with a recurve setup. I got no peep. So I don't have all these extra measures where I've got extra points of reference that I can aim with. I've got one point of reference and that's it. And that's what the recurve bow has as well. They got one point of reference. So it's a lot of anticipation, a lot of, how can I say, you got to, the work that you're putting in, for me, I have to put in double the amount of work as one of my archers that I coach on a compound bow, because lining up the bow on the face, making sure the bow's level, we don't have, like they have a little bubble in there to say, okay, the bow's level. You've got a scope that you can see at 50 meters, things like that. And I think Fadi will also tell you, because I know he's also tried to shoot a recurve, and it's not pleasant. It's a beautiful bow, but it's hard work.
Yeah. So, Ferdy, you know, from your side, take us through some of the adjustments that you are making when you pick up the bow and kind of prepare to shoot. What are the steps that you're how are you doing it?
Like Sean said, it's a mental game. You have to focus constantly and forget about the previous shot you maybe missed or whatever. And picking up the bow, then you have to settle your body, because you're picking up weight at the angle. So you lean forward, so you'll have to compensate for that all of a sudden. Getting yourself centered, and then just every step you take, you just have to relax after that and focus.
And how long did it take you to build up that mental
precision? Yeah, no, I don't think you'll ever.
It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah, no, it's constant. It's constant.
Great. Oh, no, my poor sports psychologist has to go and see a psychiatrist after I've been with them. the mental game is, you know, you'll never master it. People who tell you they've mastered the mental game, they're talking nonsense. But you learn how to adapt with the mental game. You know, I teach my students form of box breathing. I call it, keeping the body as relaxed as possible. I mean, this year at last year at the Paris Olympics, I mean, my mental game was on form. I was on par with it, you know. The only thing is I just didn't trust that little voice in the back of the head on the second last shot. And instead of listening to it, I didn't. And, so the mental game is a massive part of the sport. And what I have found, especially with the mental game in archery, I coach a lot of kids with ADHD and ADD and all these different pronouns. And they are actually able to concentrate more in school now. The teachers are actually telling me, listen, the kids are doing even better with their work, because they can actually concentrate longer in the task. I mean, I'm severely ADHD. So in the beginning, I mean, when I first started the sport, I'd pick up on anything. You know, I couldn't get myself into they call it the bubble. Mm-hmm. But now I can put myself in the bubble. I've taught myself techniques to get into that bubble for 6 arrows. After the 6 arrows are gone and Barbara walks up to go and fetch my arrows, I can look at the butterflies coming past. I can sing to the song on the radio, on the music. But as soon as she gets back to me and those arrows hit my quiver, I go back into that place. But that took years of work. That wasn't overnight. That took me 6-7 years to get to that level where I can cut off completely from everything, and a bomb can go off next to me and I'll still be able to put it where I need to put it. And that is just through hard work, mental work. Like Fadi says, it's an ongoing fight. In archery, I call him Chat. It's that little voice in the back of the head that just sometimes comes through, and he tells you to shoot the arrow, and you know you shouldn't be shooting the arrow, and then you do it, and then you're like, why did I listen to him? So, yeah.
You know, I suppose it's like anything, you know, the mental capacity we have on any day is also affected by our physical and emotional and mental space at that time. So being able to get into the bubble, or I suppose runners call that, you know, the zone, can really honestly depend from day to day. And yeah, do you have any techniques that you use, Ferdy, on helping yourself to get into the bubble, or is that something that you're still developing?
So I'm constantly trying, but what I found is to forgive yourself, learn to forgive yourself. Because in the beginning, I used to get so angry with myself if I missed the point I wanted or I shot a bad shot. And you have to learn to forgive yourself and just let that pass and focus on the next one and go on. So, yeah, I know it's a constant battle, but it's at the end of the day, you feel better afterwards.
Great. So, Sean, I want to go back a little bit into your history. What brought you into the world of adaptive archery? And from there, how did you go from participating into coaching?
My son. He was the one. My youngest son and I do everything together. Well, he's not my youngest son anymore. He's 22, finishing his LLB degree this year. But yeah, we do everything together. We walked into an archery shop and he said he wanted to try it. Then he tried it and enjoyed it. And then I said, I want to do it. And they said, you won't be able to. Mm-hmm. And I just don't accept the word can't. And I don't accept people telling me I can't achieve something. So I took on the challenge. I started in the sport and I realized this is something I'm really good at. So I had a midlife crisis at 37. And I said to my wife, you know what? I want to do this. I want to go to the Olympics. And so, yeah, I gave up my career, gave up my business, gave up everything. And my beautiful family supported me all the way. And I'm very grateful to have joined up with Barbara Manning, who's like my mother today. And then I had Stephen Ball from Tuck Sport, who's the director of Tuck Sport now. He was the high performance director back then who put me on a path and taught me what it meant to be a professional athlete. Because, you know, I was always good at sport. I've always been very good at sport. No matter what sport I tackled, I was always good at. But it's a different level when you want to go for a thing like the Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, African Games. You've got to go into a whole different – your mind – I sometimes say to guys, you sometimes sit there and you wonder, why have I done this to myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you get overseas and you work so hard to get there and the next minute you have a bad shoot, you know, and it's like, goodness, you know? So, yeah, so that's how I ended up in the sport. My son was the monster who unleashed it. But I have no regrets. I mean, I got into the sport. When I first started in the sport, there was no para-archery, really. It was me and another guy called Anton Dani PE, but he stopped shooting. So it was just basically me. And then I just started, my wife and them got upset with me because everywhere I went and I walked into a mall, wherever I went, I saw somebody who was disabled. I walked up, I said, hey, would you like to try a sport? And that's how I started getting people involved. And then people heard of me and started contacting me, and that's how it's grown. So, yeah, for the last 14 years now, I've been the chairman of Para-Archery South Africa. And for me at the end of the day, it's not about having athletes or archers go to the Olympic Games. It's about, number one, the community that we create between us as para, because we understand each other, what we're going through, no matter if you're in a chair or if you've got a leg or whatever. That is the fundamental for me. And then also to have fun. The most important, if you're not having fun, then don't do it. You know, like Fatty says, those days when you're having bad days on the bow, it's like, this is not fun. You know, I don't want to be here right now. But at the end of the day, the first thing is to have fun. And that's what I teach all my students. So my journey, I came back from Rio, and then my family asked, are you going to go back into the business? What are you going to do? And I just said, no, this is my path. This is what I want to do. And then I got told, you're not going to be able to do anything with this. And yeah, it's like, for where are we now? 15 years later, I've got my own archery shop. I coach. I've actually got young students, some of my youngsters staying with me at the moment because the Namibian guy's going back to Namibia. He was here for 2.5 weeks, which I'm coaching, which is a para Namibian athlete in archery. I've got two of my young juniors who are able bodies who are leaving for the Junior World Champs that I'm coaching, and we're just going through things because they leave in July. So for me, it's about I don't care what's your disability, what's not your disability. I'm just there, and I want to introduce the people to the sport of archery. It's my life. I love it, you know. Like my wife says, if I could sleep next to my bow sometimes, I would.
It sounds like you have a strong skill and you're passionate about sharing that skill with the people you come into contact with.
Yep. My kids are both, you know, my daughter's getting married next year and my son's 22. And so I said to my wife that I said, yes, I feel, don't you think we should adopt, or don't you think? And she says, Sean, you got 120 kids. You don't need more kids, because our house is always full of kids. You know, it's always, oh yeah, this guy's coming to visit. He's coming for coaching for a week. And then I forgot that it's actually 2.5 weeks that he's going to be spending with us, you know, things like that. So yeah, it's really, yeah, it's, I love it. You sleep in it. And the nice thing is I do everything from my property now. So I get up in the morning and just roll over to work and I do what I need to do. And nobody's around. I can roll back, get on my bed, pressure relief, chill. So yeah, I enjoy what I do.
Brilliant. And Ferdy, what brought you to adaptive archery?
Well, like any naughty little boy, I've always been interested in bows and arrows, cowboys and Indians. And I think it was in 2018, someone handed me a bow and said, go try. So I shot for a while and I liked it. And then I met Sean in a doctor's office, actually.
Okay.
And we started talking about it. And
so we actually made it to specialist, yeah.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and I went to him for a few tips and tricks. Walked a few miles. And yep. I ended up having 4 South African national indoor championship titles under my belt.
Fantastic. Well done.
And currently I am still the North Gauteng Archery Association chairman.
Yeah, he does a lot of work.
Yeah.
Rather him than me there.
And for you, aspirations to go to the Olympics?
I don't do too good with the sun. So I don't shoot the outdoor stuff as much. I would rather stay indoors, and that's not an Olympic sport.
Okay.
And I've made peace with that. That's fine.
Great. How popular is inclusive archery, both here in South Africa and then globally?
South Africa, we currently have, we've got 9 competing at arch, or actually 10 competing through the country. So at the moment, we're hoping to qualify in Brisbane in 2027. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that we'll have a full men's team going over to qualify. And I'll be in W1. There's not many of us around. The big thing is trying to find a lady who wants to do it, because you're in at the Olympics, you got an opportunity with a mixed team, and that's where medals can be won a lot easier as individual. Mm-hmm. Going back to how big is the sport, it's huge. To give you an idea, in my class at a world champs now, you're talking 125 of the best athletes in the world coming to there. In the compound men class where Fadi's in there, they're going up to almost 200 athletes now. So World Archery has been talking about a cutoff, like in the able-bodied class. Mm-hmm. So we have a ranking round. And if you don't make the top 69, who is ever past 69, goodbye. Thank you for coming. That's how the sport's grown internationally. So I'm really working hard with Barbara and Africa, trying to build the sport in Africa more. So we've got Namibia going now. We've got Zim's got one guy. We've got a person in Lesotho. So Kenya. I'm quite involved with that. That's something I'm looking at after LA to get more involved with World Archery in Africa, trying to get that built up even stronger. But yeah, I think the big thing is the challenges for disabled people getting into the sport. That's where it comes along, so that's something. And then also archery in the beginning, when you start off, the big thing is a lot of people say it's a very expensive sport, which I've now managed to sort out a bit more. That was my biggest goal that I had when I opened my shop, was to try and bring the sport to everybody at a better deal. But it is a more expensive sport. But I also say, you go and buy a set of golf clubs and go play golf every second weekend and see what that costs you. Mm-hmm. Go and buy a mountain bike and see what that costs you. But the difference is, once you've got it, you've got it. And like Fadi says, he loves the indoor, he enjoys it. That's where he gets his break from reality and everybody else. Because like we were saying, when you go shoot, you can't be sitting worrying about you had a fight with the missus, the dog, all this. There you got to focus. Otherwise, you're going to – and that's where when I'm having a bad day and I get on the bow and I just start shooting, everything just – my wife will say to me, listen, you haven't shot, go and shoot. You need to calm down a bit. So that side, archery has helped me a lot, especially on the mental side because of, after the accident, depression, things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that a lot of us disabled athletes actually battle with more than the disabilities, still dealing with what we go through every day.
Yeah,
I was speaking to a blind athlete who plays beep baseball and goalball. And he was saying very much that, you know, when he initially was blinded after a drive-by shooting at the age of 16, that he learned to channel some of his energy, his passion. I don't want to use the word aggression because I think that that's, but maybe competitiveness, his energy into the sports that he was playing. And really it helped him to manage some of the emotional side effects of having experienced that. So there definitely is so much benefit to playing with a sport, and one that requires that kind of focus, I think, very much. It allows you to really focus your attention, your energies, and that relieves a lot of stress. Ferdy, what do you enjoy about adaptive archery? What does archery give to you?
Well, it made me mentally stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The focus, and it teaches you to like find your happy place,
mm-hmm.
and stay in your happy place for as long as you can. And you meet your kind of people, if I can put it like that.
Yeah.
Everybody, if you say something and you think, oh, I shouldn't have said that, but everybody there understands exactly what you're talking about. And that isn't something you can do in a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
That's a good summary. It's fun.
It's fun.
And from conversations you've had with other archers, what sort of feelings do you, is there that much of a similar experience for them? Or have you had anything that people have said to you that you've gone, wow, that's interesting in terms of what they've gained from the sport?
I think most of them feel the same about it. It's another thing we can actively participate in and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Sean, from your side, have you heard any, I mean, you mentioned about the increased attention spans for people living with ADHD or ASD. Other more surprising consequences of people coming and taking up adaptive archery?
Well, the big thing is when we're in rehab, the first thing they teach you, they want you to go and play is basketball or table tennis or, you know, wheelchair rugby. And not everybody fits into those sports. And people don't get told about different types of sports that are out there, you know. So for me, when especially when it comes to the adaptive side, you know, when people come to me and say, really? And I say, yeah. And they go, oh, but you won't be able to get me to shoot. And I'm like, you want to bet? Let's go. You know, so, and when they realize that they can do this, you know, they enjoy it. And like Fadi was saying, the nice thing is, you know, what I enjoy when we get to the range, now that we've so many of us now, we can crack a joke. We can turn around and call each other footloose, or, you know, I enjoy long walks on the beach, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. We can joke at each other. And people look at us sometimes and think, oh, you can't say that to each other. You know what I'm saying? So that's the nice thing. When I get there and I say, listen, guys, I'm not feeling good today. The guys will say, what's wrong? And I say, I think I'm getting a bladder infection. Fatty knows what a bladder infection is.
They get it. Yeah, they get it.
You know, the guy next to me who's standing there looks at you and goes, I've never had one in my life. You know, it's those little things that sometimes you can just release around the guys and go, yes, guys, you know, I've just – and you can talk about it, you know, where, you know, it's you're like, or you're having a bad day and you get to meet one of the guys and you say, hey, how's your day? No, this, you know, I mean, right in the beginning when I lost my legs, I mean, I spoke to Fatty a couple of times about it and I thought, okay, what? Because I've only been in the chair 7 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm still a baby in the chair. You know, I'm still learning my body to this day. You know, now that I'm on a proper wheelchair and I'm sitting in a much better wheelchair, I can actually feel when my wheels are flat. They're not flat. Mm-hmm. And it's weird little things that people don't understand. They think we feel pain differently. You know, when people think, oh, you're in a wheelchair, you don't feel pain. We feel more pain than what you think because we get reverted pain, which is a killer. You know, there's days where you know, and the big thing is, like you're asking me, I said to you that LA will be my last, is because your body gets tired. People think we sit in a chair all day. You can.
It's nice sounds and, like it's so easy, but it really isn't.
But
yeah.
By the end of the day, your body. Yeah, your body is finished. I mean, if I'm in the chair the whole day, by the time my wife gets home from work, I want to eat and I want to come lie down in my bed because my body is finished. And trying to explain that to people who don't understand it, they look at you. The nice thing is the team I have around me, my physios, my people, they all know when I say I'm tired or I'm not feeling. Before I'd push it beyond that, I would push right through it all. But then I'd end up in hospital for 2 weeks with a bladder infection or a kidney infection or this. So I've learned to listen to my body, which is tough for me because I'm not that type of person who just stops. But you have to. And you know, but it doesn't slow me down. And I don't think it slows Fatty down either because, I mean, Fatty flies bloody massive drones and he does everything. And people, you know, they and that's the scary thing. People look at yourself, me, Fatty, my mom. You know, my mom's got a famous saying. Every time they hear my mom's deaf, everybody will look at her and start speaking like with their mouth. And my mom will look at them and go, I'm deaf, not dumb, you know. And that's the same thing with being in a wheelchair. People look at us sometimes. I just like it when the kids look at me because when they ask me what happened to the arm, I tell them I picked my nose and the arm fell off, you know, things like that. But, you know, you get to deal with it. And the guys I coach, they know. You know, they want to, and I'm not saying you, me and Fady or anybody who's disabled, people must feel sorry for us because I don't want to be felt sorry for. No. You feel sorry for me, but it doesn't mean our problems are more than somebody else's problems that they're dealing with, and that's the thing I always try to get across. People mustn't think because we're in chairs, our problems are bigger than their problems, because everybody's dealing with their own things in their own time, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes there and behind the scenes on the other side. The biggest thing I found after going into the chair was my mental well-being. That's tough. But I mean, after my accident, I got PTSD. So I had to work through that, which I've done over the last, but my whole family was with me. So we've all worked through it together. So we're getting through it. But yeah, stupid thing. We got caught in the lift yesterday, me and my son. I nearly freaked out, you know, but my son kept me calm and we got through it, you know. But yeah, I adapt to sport, and I think that's the big thing. And no matter what sport it is, if you can get in, if you are disabled or anything, the community and adaptiveness is for me far better than in the. I hate traveling with the able bodies. I hate it. It's not because they're bad people. I just don't like traveling with them because they moan more than anybody else. You know, I always say to the Olympians, we have Olympic camps together, and I look at them I'm like, yes, you guys are prima donnas. You got no idea what it means to, you know. So, yeah, those are the little things that I laugh sometimes at. But, you know, when we go to as the Olympic team to the Paralympics, I mean, we're all in different sports codes, but when we get together, we it's like, we're there. It's and that what gives me my fight, you know. Besides my beautiful family and that, when I get to the Olympics, I'm around. Okay, I'm called Opa now by all the athletes. But when I get around those guys and that spirit, you know, you go into the Olympic Village and you think you got problems until you see a guy come past you with a machine under his wheelchair, breathing for him, and he talks to you through a laptop or a tablet. Then you actually say, oh, well done. I can still do my own thing, you know. So, yeah, so those are the type of things I look at. I'm always grateful for what I have because at the end of the day, I don't want to be a quadriplegic because that is something I don't think I would be able to live with. But there are guys who are quadriplegics and they live with it and they have a life and they do things. And that's what people must realize.
You know, I've always maintained that we learn, we adapt. And we think that something would be impossible to accept and move forwards from. And yet we see people who are doing it on a daily basis and living good, productive, enjoying having the same fun and the same value from life that everybody else does. And I think that's so important. But I think you've really highlighted there a couple of fundamental things about the importance of community and the shared understanding, the shared experience, and the value that community brings, and finding that through a shared love of sport and participating in sport is a good way of doing it. And as you said, the shared enjoyment of the activity is also very much a positive thing. So from there, if people want to learn more about inclusive archery, where can they turn? Where can they find out more information?
That's just for a little one-armed bandit.
Yeah, the easiest is they can contact me.
Yeah.
They can drop me a WhatsApp or an email. And yeah, they're welcome to come through wherever they are. And if they in a different province, I can get them in touch with somebody who can help them, because I am working with a whole lot of people all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get them going, you know, and it's not going to cost them anything. Just come and try it, and we could take it from there. I mean, for me, it's about.
But nothing to lose.
Exactly.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
You've got nothing to lose. And you might just end up finding. And the nice thing what's happened with which hasn't been mentioned yet in archery is that besides the para side, the able bodies it's also a family. They've also, mm-hmm. you know, I go to other sports codes like athletics and that, and it's para this. Our able body athletes look up to us as much as what we look up to them, you know, and they actually get scared of us, because I've beaten a couple of the top guys in this country and I've been with the able body team overseas. So it's not like we're inferior to them. Don't get me wrong, because the scores that are getting shot internationally now by the para archers in CMO are equivalent to the able body guys. So there's no difference because you're disabled, not disabled. So I must say in on our side in archery, the community is great. And that's why I really enjoy archery. What you call it, the people are very accepting of what, no matter what it is. And that's why I really like archery. I mean, I played ice hockey. I played roller hockey for South Africa. I've done so many different sports. And this is one of those sports I really love and I really enjoy, because the community is really there for each other. And you know, the messages you get when you're overseas from everybody, it's not just from the para guys, it's from the able bodies. And then it's also from international. You know, I've been very fortunate that I've got international friends all around the world. And 90% of them, or 80%, 70% of them are able bodies, not even para, you know. So yeah, if they can see something you're doing, I mean, the experience, I just want to mention one thing, and I'll never forget it. And that was Paris. You know, I'm sitting there shooting in front of 10,000 people in the stadium. Never in my life have I experienced something like that. And you got people going mad when you hit the 10. I mean, mad. It was crazy, you know. And you come out of the stadium, you got people standing in rows wanting your autograph, you know. And it was mind blowing. And people are coming up to you and going, you know, you inspired me. I've just spoken to my sister whose son is in a wheelchair. You know, and if you can just change one person's life, if it's able-bodied or disabled, you've done something.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of the reasons that increasingly I'm thinking of what we're talking about. It's not adaptive archery, it's inclusive archery. And I absolutely love that, because I think so often the challenges that we face is because we are separated out because of our disabilities. So the inclusive side, from what you're saying, that, you know, you are shooting along with people who are non-disabled. It doesn't matter. You are shooting with people who are at the top of their game. And that's what's important. So instead of talking, well, having the title of this as something about adaptive archery, I'm definitely going to be using inclusive archery. And I'm really grateful that that's one of the strongest points that has come through as we've been talking. But in terms of how people can reach you, you do, is there a website that you can refer people to about adaptive archery or adaptive archery particularly?
The easiest, there's two ways. They can go to, straight to my website, which is Odyssey, not my website, my email is odysseyarcherysa@gmail.com.
Right, thank you.
Or they can go to Sana's website, which is, if they type in the word Sana, it's S-A-N-A-A on their Google, it'll come up. And then through that, they can contact the secretary of Sana, which is Barbara Manning, and they'll put those people onto me. If they contact me on my email, that's fine. Or they can even contact me on my cell if they wish and drop me a WhatsApp, and then I'll get back to them. Yeah, and we could take it from there, definitely.
And I'm going to make an absolute guess and say Sana, S-A-N-A-A, South African National Archery Association. Ha.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Okay. We'll add those into the show notes so that people can easily make contact if they choose to. And as you say, it's anybody of any ability you can work with and that you'll be happy to chat to.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. So I suppose the final question that I want to just check in with you about is to say, what would the first steps be for someone wanting to take up inclusive archery?
Contact someone that is doing it currently. Everyone will tell you, don't try it. I would say that's the first step.
Great. Given us the ability to do that from the contacts. Sean, you were saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's become my best friend, Phil. He phoned me three weeks before I was leaving for Rio, and he said to me, I hear you can help me. I want to learn archery. And I said, yeah. And when I got back from Rio, he phoned me like the first week I'm back up, saying, listen, dude, I just got back. Give me a bit of a break, you know. And he says to me, but I heard you can. I said, okay, stick with me. I'm going to make you famous. And Fanny knows that. I always say that to everybody. Stick with me. I'm going to make you famous. And, yeah, I took him to Tokyo with me. And, you know what? The thing is, get to somebody who knows what they're doing. Get to somebody who knows about adaptive archery. So, yeah, I'm not saying I know everything, but I have been in the sport 15 years, and I've got a vast knowledge on it, and I've worked with the best in the world.
Great contact list as well.
Yeah. And I'm very fortunate. I bring out the Dutch international team every year. They come out to train in South Africa. I bring out a lot of international teams come and use our facilities in this country. I've got a wide network that I can tap into, which if I can't get something right, yeah. And that helps me a lot when I'm dealing with certain things, because then I can actually tap into a coach that I know they got somebody like that on their team and say, okay, how can I go about this like this and that, you know? So, and the nice thing is I've even got doctors that I can tap into overseas that can help me to make sure that I'm not going to do something to hurt that archer, because that's very important. That's what people must remember. You end up at somebody who's a normal archer. He has no clue what he's dealing with. He sees you in a wheelchair and he thinks, oh, yeah, here we go. And then 2 days later, that guy can't even do anything, and then he doesn't understand why. But it's because of this on his back or that or this or that. So, yeah, so that's my recommendation. You speak to somebody that knows what they're doing. And then, of course, don't worry about anything else. Just come over and have fun. And I talk too much, so they'll love it, and we'll have fun. That's the most important. I mean, I'm having we're having in November, Fatty. The guys are all coming to me from what's it, the sports thing, SAP. What's it?
I want to say SASCO, but it's nothing.
No. It's also a foundation that introduces guys to everything, you know, and they're coming over to me in November again, and they're bringing all the new guys with, and they're coming to come and shoot and try archery, which is also very cool. I'm actually speaking to a guy who's just ended up in rehab now, and I'm not even talking about archery. We're just talking about dealing with getting through rehab and dealing, you know. So the nice thing what this sport's done for me, it's opened so many different doors. I just want to come back to when you're talking about able-bodied athletes and disabled athletes, but which I'm really proud of now is that SASCOC has made it very, they've they've included us together. So when we have camps, we have them together now. So disabled athletes and able-bodied athletes are together. And I'll never forget when I went to Rio, and this is what I just wanted to say, is I'm sitting there and in this big camp and the Sevens rugby team walks in and Custer Semenya and you name the names, Chad Leclerc, the whole lot are there. And I'm sitting there and I bump Barbara on the shoulder. I say, "Hey, Barbs, check, there's that one. Check, there's that one." And she looks at me and she says, and she bumps me back. She says, "Check, there's Sean." And I went and I looked at her and she says, "You also here now." And that was the funny thing. You know, you felt inferior, but meanwhile, we are all on the same playing field, if not having to work harder to be at the same playing field than what those athletes are. So, yeah, so I'm very proud that Sascock did do that. I mean, after Rio, para-athletes started getting exactly the same amount of money for their gold medal as the able bodies.
Yeah.
So there's still things to be worked on, and that's things that I would like to get involved with. But trying to do that and coach and have everything and then try to qualify for – LA and this time around to make it through to those medals, you know, you got to prioritize certain things, and that's the big thing. You know, we work on cycles, we don't work on years, and you know, I've got six cycles left, and I've got to qualify, so it's around the corner type of thing.
Yeah, and after all, there are only 24 hours in each day, so and sleep is also an important thing to do. So, I think on that note, Sean Anderson, Ferdy van Eerden, thank you both so much for coming and chatting to us today about inclusive archery. It has been fascinating to talk to you, to learn a little bit more about the sport, about how it's played, and about the really important role that I see that sport being more inclusive in some fairly major areas. Hopefully that will now start spilling out into other areas of society. So we wait to see if that's going to happen, and we keep hoping. So thank you both for coming and chatting to me today on A Different Way of Seeing. It's been fantastic to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Hi, it's Lois again. I'm not certain if you know, but I am a coach who works specifically with people with disabilities. If you have a disability and are wanting to achieve your goals, or maybe think through some of the challenges that you're facing in your professional or personal life, or want to take up a new opportunity, a new adventure, but just don't seem to be able to get to doing it, let's explore how I can help you. Hop onto the Contact Me form on my website, www.loisstrachan.com. That's Loisstrachan, LOISSTRACHAN.com. And sign up for a 30-minute discovery call so we can chat to see if I am the right person to help you to achieve your goals. Contact me now for that free 30-minute discovery call on loisstrachan.com. I'd love to have the opportunity of helping you to achieve your goals.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yasi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.